Welcome to the Pop Culture Pod Podcast. Now let's begin.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go,
make it so.
Make it so. Make it so. Man,
it doesn't show signs
of stopping. And I brought me some tea, a grey hot. The
lights
turned way down low.
Make it so. Make it so. Make it so.
When we finally kiss.
Good night.
How I hate going out in
the storm. But if you...
Really?
Shut up, Wesley.
All the way home, I'll be...
Warm. Oh, the fire is slowly dying. And I... Dear.
We're still goodbye, then.
But as long as you love me, so make it so.
Make it so.
Make it so.
Well, hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub. This is our Deep Space Nine discussion episodes, and this is Season 6.0, Part 2. Last time we assembled the Deep Space Nine discussion panel, we had some technical difficulties, so we only talked about the first six episodes of Season 6. So this episode, because it's part two, we're going to discuss episodes 7 through 13 of Season 6. And as always, I am not alone. Let's go around the table. First up, we've got Mr. Richard Szabo. How's it going, Richard?
Fan-friggin-tastic. Ready to talk about some Star Trek with y'all nerds.
Excellent. Next up is Ragnar. How's it going, Ragnar?
Hey, pretty good. Hello, everyone.
And last but not least, we have Curtis Holloway. How's it going, Curtis?
Just fantastic. Hey, everybody.
And at the time of this recording, we are still in the midst of the COVID pandemic. And in our little corner of the globe, Alberta, except for Ragnar, he's in Saskatchewan. We're locking down again. Good times ahead. It's gonna be a good Christmas, said no one. But we'll make the best of it. And we're gonna discuss some Deep Space Nine. So let's get this party started. All right, so, where am I here? Episode 131 of the series, 7th of the season, You Are Cordially Invited, Stardate 51247.5, directed by David Livingston, written by Ronald D. Moore, original air date, November 10th, 1997. Worf's plans for a traditional Klingon wedding hinge on Martok's demanding wife, Sarella, accepting Dax into their family. I guess I should have done this beforehand. The last episode was Sacrifice of Angels, so this is the end of that six-part story arc that began the season, where Sisko and the Defiant crew take back Deep Space Nine and force the Dominion Cardassian alliance to basically retreat from Deep Space Nine. So, you know, the first six episodes are pretty heavy. You know, like, there was some pretty dark stuff that took place during that time. So this was a nice change. It was a nice change to have a wedding. And it was a fun episode. You know, I loved the... You know, we had Alexander, you know, in this episode again. You know, I love the bachelor-esque week of, you know, fasting and hardship that the guys had to endure. I loved the bachelorette party that Dax had. I loved the outfits that Dax wore in this episode. You know, definitely the best, in my opinion, the best wedding dress ever. And yeah, she's just insanely beautiful. And Worf was a very lucky man. All right, so Richard, what are your thoughts on this episode?
I actually really like this episode. As you all probably know, I'm a bit of a Klingon kind of guy. I do really, really like Klingons. So we've got Martok, one of my all-time favorite Klingons, and he's just in love with this mercurial, like, ridiculous ice queen of a Klingon woman.
Yep.
And he's just so happy about it, and he can't wait to die honorably for her. It's kind of romantic in its own way. And I understand, you know, why Sorella is so ridiculous in a lot of ways. She seems to believe that she's got very noble roots, but according to Jadzia, not quite as noble as she thought she did. Mm-hmm. And she didn't like that. But when you grow up and you live like that, it's kind of hard to break those habits. And yeah, the parties are great. Honestly, it was a good, fun episode. I know there was a lot of really serious episodes surrounding this one, and this one was just fun. And the road to Kalhaya, and, like, you know, the singing and the fire and stoke the fire and all this greatness. And I actually really liked the wedding itself. It kind of had, like, a bit of Klingon lore backstory.
Yep.
It was much more fun, I think, than Keiko and Miles' wedding. But that was a very, like, traditional, like, prudish wedding by comparison.
Yep.
And I wish they would have shown them actually beating Worf up with those sticks at the end there when they cut the scene. That would have been really great. But yeah, I really like this episode. It's a lot of fun, and it's always a watch on my rotation through Deep Space Nine.
Absolutely, absolutely. I agree with everything you said. One thing I wanted to add that I totally forgot. The only nitpick I have for this episode, and it's very minor nitpick, is I wish that somebody from the Enterprise would have showed up. Like, I realize they're in a war, and I realize all that, but I would love if Geordi would have showed up, and Geordi would have been like, you know, basically, the Enterprise, because of what's going on with the war, you know, they can't all come, you know, so maybe they send, you know, Geordi. You know, like, it would have been awesome. I just think, you know, you wouldn't have to focus on Geordi. You know, he can just be a background character. I would love to have seen him take, you know, the road to Kalhaya. Like, I know they can't get Patrick Stewart. I know they can't get Brent Spiner, you know. But, I mean, LeVar Burton, he directed the very next episode. So I know he was available, right? I just wish they would have had...
I agree. I just wish... Honest. I totally agree with that.
I just wish one of them would have been there. Like, even if they don't, you know, only have a handful of lines, you know, it would have been fantastic to just have that connection. And I really think LeVar Burton would have been up for it. Because, like I said, he's directing, but episodes. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Well, another thing they could have done would have been just to say, like, present a reason why the Enterprise crew couldn't be there.
Yeah.
They could have easily just said, like, you know, Jean-Luc Picard sends his, and the crew send their regards, but they're off doing X thing and we're unable to make it. Like, that would have been good, too.
Yeah, so, you know, some sort of acknowledgement.
I'm a little ashamed to ask, but where was the Enterprise during the early season 6 of DS9? Was it at the stage of Generations yet? Was it past that?
It was season 6 takes place after First Contact. Okay. So the Enterprise, basically the reason why we didn't see it fighting with the Defiant and stuff during the war is they were basically off on diplomatic missions. They were off trying to
being the flagship.
Yeah, getting races to join the Federation. You know, that sort of thing. Which we did.
Also on that long shakedown cruise as well?
Well, no, it was already past their shakedown cruise, because First Contact took place just about the halfway point of Season 5. So they'd already been in space for a year at that point. But as they established in Insurrection, you know, basically they're out, you know, welcome, you know, fast-tracking members to join the Federation because they needed resources and so on to help with the war. So, but according to some, you know, if you consider the books, which Paramount or CBS doesn't consider canon, the Enterprise was fighting like on different fronts during the war as well. Like when Beta Zed got taken by the Dominion, the Enterprise was one of the ships that helped liberate it, I believe. But anyway, you know, a small nitpick. That was something I was really hoping for with this episode, was that somebody would show up. And I say Geordi, you know, because of LeVar Burton's schedule. Like I said, he directs the very next episode. But it, you know, like it's easy for him to put the contacts in, right? Like, you know, having Riker come during war, you know, I guess Troy could have came, I guess, maybe. But that would have been awkward with them having dated. Or, you know, Dr. Crusher, but her and Worf weren't that close. Like, Geordi and Worf were buddies, you know? So, anyway, Ragnar, your thoughts, sir.
Well, similar to Richard, I wanted to just touch on, I can't think of the character's name right now, but Martok's wife.
Sirella,
thank you. It slipped my mind. That scene at the beginning of this episode is one of my all-time favorite Deep Space Nine moments. She walks onto the station. She shreds everybody to ribbons. Is just such a raging bitch to everyone. Yeah. And then when the camera pans over to Martok, he's just beaming. Just grinning ear to ear, and he just, you know, isn't she wonderful? Like, he's just so smitten with her. Yeah. I just love it. Because we, you know, we definitely didn't know what to expect from Martok's wife, but we weren't expecting what we got. So, I just love that part so much. It's one of my favorite DS9 moments. But yeah, this is definitely a great episode. I myself am not normally a fan of weddings or wedding-based episodes, but this is a great episode, great wedding. And my biggest nitpick would just be that scene at the end when they all get to rush Worf. It really didn't look like they were hitting him very hard, and I really, really think for all that they had been through, they would have just been wailing on him.
100%. They would have beat like, his ass. I'm surprised they didn't bust out pain sticks.
Yeah, like they would have been way, way more. Yeah.
Well,
but anyway,
the thing with that though is they hadn't eaten for days, right? Whereas like,
oh, that's true.
Whereas Worf is used to that sort of thing. Like I always thought, you know, what we didn't see was Worf like just taking him out like nothing.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that would have been good too.
But Curtis, your thoughts, sir.
Well, I'm not normally quite as gushy over the Klingon episodes as everyone else, although I do love me a good Klingon episode. Mm-hmm. This one really stands out as probably my favorite Klingon episode in this series for many of the reasons that have already been talked about. Martok and his reaction to Sirella. Sirella herself just being, as Martok himself said, magnificent. She was just fantastic. But it's always nice to see sort of a side of the Klingons that isn't me warrior, hit with stick, kill, you know. it's just nice to get some more cultural development that isn't so much about the warrior culture. So I definitely like the episode. It's never on my skip list. And, well, the girlfriend and I have finished Deep Space Nine since our last podcast episode, I think. So
nice.
The sting is still pretty fresh from the end of season 6. So Jadzia episodes are sort of still a bit of a sensitive topic, but no, definitely one of my favorite episodes in the series. Not a nap episode whatsoever.
Well, and I know we're going to talk about it more when we get to that point. But I just want to throw it out there. Like, I hated that they killed her off. I really did. Like, I understand, like, at the time, there's so many rumors floating around there, you know, because she went to do Becker, right? But that's not the truth, according to her, anyway, that the Becker deal didn't actually happen until after she was let go from Deep Space Nine. Basically, they wanted her to sign her contract, but they wanted her basically to have more of a reduced role, according to her. And I think maybe even less pay. And she was like, no, I want more pay and, you know, if anything, a bigger role. And it all depends on who you talk to, right? But to kill her off the way they did, I hated that because for a couple of reasons. One, I hated the, you know, Gul Dukat killing her because then it kind of makes, like, you would think Worf would be hunting for Dukat at that point, right? Like, Dukat is Picard, or not Picard, but Dukat is Sisko's enemy. And now he's kind of become Worf's enemy. And then Worf doesn't really follow up on that, right? Like, at least in my opinion.
Not really. He's like, I'm going to fly kind of close to a star for a bit. And that's
good. Yeah. Whereas...
No, I'm with you. Like, Katie, being a first-time watcher, loved Jadzia. Like,
yes.
She's a character that really speaks to,
yeah,
I think, probably a lot of the female fans, in particular, a lot of them that are sort of new to sci-fi. They realize, like, oh, you know, this chick's awesome. She's brilliant. She's super badass. You know, it's a character that they can emotionally identify with.
Yep.
And it really totally... I love Ezri. Don't get me wrong.
Yep.
But, yeah, no, you're right. They did Jadzia dirty, for sure.
Yeah, I don't hate Ezri at all, but I just wish what they would have done... Like, this is what I would have done had I been Rick Berman. I would have just had her character transfer to a ship. You know, it's wartime, right? Like, and she's spent time commanding the Defiant on many missions. You know, like, to me, it wouldn't have been out of character for them to say, like, we need more captains at this point. You know, she's got command experience. You know, Curzon had command experience. You know, like, to me, it wouldn't have been out of the realm of possibility for her to get a battlefield promotion to captain and given command of a ship. And,
she did command the Defiant prior
yep,
to this.
Yep. And, you know, and then they basically ship her off for the last season saying, well, she's fighting on the Romulan front, right? So she's not anywhere near Deep Space Nine, so that's why she doesn't check in. And maybe bring her back for the last episode. Bring her back for a scene, you know, where her and Worf are reunited. And maybe, you know, maybe she gets to, I don't know, whatever. She gets to keep her
command.
Somebody
cutting onions in here? Cut it out.
I just
I'm not crying, you're crying.
I just wish they wouldn't have killed her off. And as much as I like Ezri, like not knocking the actress or anything like that, but I think that her episodes and scenes could have been used for other characters. Because, I mean, Deep Space Nine has a huge cast to begin with. You know, they didn't really need to introduce a new character in the last season.
Yeah, they had the biggest ensemble cast of all of them, didn't they?
Yeah. You know, not knocking Ezri. I agree with you, Curtis, that they done Jadzia dirty. I really wish they would have just shipped her off and then brought her back for a throwaway scene, and then that's it. You know.
But, well, I also think if they're gonna kill her, they should have just killed her, and she should have stayed dead. Have Dax die. Have the symbiont die. The whole character's dead.
Right.
And then you have to acknowledge it, right? Then you have to have Sisko and Worf teaming up to get revenge.
Yeah.
That would have been, I mean,
which
again,
would have still been great.
You're right. But, I mean, I don't know. It felt so cheap to have Dax back the next episode.
What?
As happy as I was. And as I do love Ezri. Nicole DeBoer kills it.
But, you know, if they were, like, adamant on killing her off, I just wish she would have died in battle. Like, she would have died on the Bridge of the Defiant. Like, her console blew up. And, you know, because, I mean, a lot of red shirts die in Star Trek. Like, this would have been just,
God.
Like, she died. Like, to have Dukat kill her the way she did, I didn't like that. I really thought...
That sucked.
Yeah. But, anywho...
I don't know if you guys ever watched Becker. Her being on that show wasn't that great.
No, she was the hot coffee shop chick. Like, that, you know. And, yeah, unfortunately, like, because they... She was only there for, I think, like two seasons, and then they recast, or they brought in a new character. played by Nancy Travis, and she was a lot, no offense to Terry Farrell, but she was a lot better, because she's got a little bit more comedic chops. But anyway.
Well, and honestly, if using her as a, like, just the hot girl is such a waste of Terry Farrell.
Oh, yeah, because
my goodness.
She's got so much more talent, honestly.
Yep. Oh, I agree. All right, well, let's move on to the next episode. Episode 132, eighth of the season, and it's Resurrection. Stardate Unknown, directed by LeVar Burton, written by Michael Taylor. Original air date, November 17th, 1997. The Mirror Universe counterpart of Kira's dead love, Vedic Barile, takes her hostage on Deep Space Nine as he is running from the evil alliance of his universe. This probably gets my nomination for worst episode of the season. I hated this episode.
Yep.
I'm not a fan of the Mirror Universe episodes to begin with. And seeing Vedic Barile brought back in this way, it was not needed. This is a hard pass. I don't think I've watched this since I originally saw it, 1997, so 23 years ago. I don't think I've watched it in 23 years. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Oh, I completely with you. This is one of the weakest episodes in the whole series, and definitely the weakest of the season. And it's so crazy because there's so many super great strong episodes this season that it's just like, well, what happened here? Like, oof, somebody dropped a ball somewhere. Yeah. This is one I usually skip.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when I was reading the little summary of it, I was thinking, I don't even remember this episode, so I think I skipped it quite a few times.
Yep.
No, this is just not a standout one, that's for sure.
No. Curtis, your thoughts?
I agree. It would have been far better to let Barile rest in peace, as it were. The odd time that I can't manage to nap through this episode, I feel like its only redeeming quality is that Worf, of all characters, is the comic relief when he gets his Mechleth stolen. And that's about all the good things I have to say about this episode.
Oh, I don't even remember that. Wow.
They're having dinner, and Barile talks about, I can't remember how it comes up, but he ends up just pulling the Mechleth out from behind his back and slicing the cake with it, all like, ha, got you, Klingon. And that's funny. And then the rest of the episode, I don't even know. And I usually like the Mirror Universe episodes, but this one, nah.
Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I don't have a lot to say about this episode. The only good scene was the dinner scene with the Mechleth that Curtis mentioned. And beyond that, this was worse than like a filler episode. This was worse than a clip show. This was, in my mind, likely the number one worst episode of the entire series. And I don't know what else could be worse. I think it's even worse than, what's that one, that, Runaway Home, you know?
Oh, three, yeah.
Four, you know.
Yeah, don't start it. Don't start it.
Yeah. Alamo Rain, something, yep. Something.
Yeah. We got honestly, to see him sing that live, though, which was kind of cool,
yeah.
But kind of cringe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, part of the problem, too, is that they just throw these, like, these love things at Kira, hoping that something will stick. And this is just, like, another example. Like, here's the Barile. We know that one works. So we'll just throw in Barile, you know, pay the guy a few bucks, show up for an episode. Yeah. Just make him a bad guy. Yeah. And I don't like Deep Space Nine Mirror Universe episodes. And this is the worst one by far. I think beyond that, that's all I really have to say about this episode.
Yeah, I agree. I like the first Mirror Universe episode. And then that's kind of where it ended for me. I was like, no, it's getting too much. All right, so the next episode is 133rd of the series, ninth of the season, and that's Statistical Probabilities, Stardate Unknown, directed by Anson Williams, story by Pam P. Pietra Forte and teleplay by Rene Echeverria. Original air date November 24th, 1997. Bashir attempts to reintegrate genetically engineered misfits into society, but they are asked by Starfleet to become a think tank when they provide insightful analysis of upcoming Dominion peace talks. I didn't mind this episode. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, this is the episode we see Damar as a legate for the first time. It's not the worst episode, but not the best. But I actually didn't mind it. It was all right. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I don't have that many on this one. I don't mind the episodes with these four. It's sort of like a nice break. But I don't know. To be honest, I find them a little bit hard to get through. So I don't know that I have a lot to meaningfully contribute on an opinion in this one.
No worries. No worries. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
Honestly, I like these episodes. The sort of the banter, you know, between Jack and Lauren. Patrick's probably my favorite. He's very, very simple, but basically a genius, you know, very innocent. Lauren is just like, you know, you know, she gets around, I think. But a fun fact that I learned is that Lauren always has to be in contact with something. Like, she always has to be touching something. It's kind of strange. I thought that was an interesting side effect of her situation. And then Serena, we get to learn more about her later, I think. But then they have the think tank and they break down what, you know, Damar and Weyoun say in Dominionese, which I thought that was super cool. I actually really liked this episode, to be honest. And then Patrick and Chief O'Brien become besties, which I thought was super cool. It's a fun episode. I don't skip it. I like it. It's not like the best episode as far as, like, you know, screenwriting and, you know, the acting and everything. It was fun and it was cool, and I really liked the Do-Re-Mi scene. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, shoot me if you want, but I thought it was super cool. Like, they harmonized really well together.
Different episode, yo.
Oh, it was the next one, wasn't it? Oh, it was, because Serena, never mind. Okay, yeah, we'll just forget about that. I didn't say anything.
one thing that I was kind of like jaw-dropping was like when they come to the realization that the Federation cannot win the war and that, you know, that the Federation should surrender. Like, that was like, what? You know, like, I know things are bad, but really? Like, you know, to me that was very jaw-dropping, and it was, you know, kind of a slap in the face. It's like, things aren't that, you know, like, yes, they took back Deep Space Nine. Yes, they control the wormhole, but things are not good for the Federation. Like, they are really bad right now. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, you know, I actually really liked this episode. I definitely found the, you know, the genius crowd a little annoying, some of these characters, but I really liked the possibility that came out of it about, you know, using these people and focusing them on a task, and they come up with this horrible idea that the Federation is doomed to lose the war. They become kind of like a think tank. I thought that was a really cool concept. And these guys come back again later, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Everybody.
Yeah, so I remember thinking that, like, that was a cool idea as a kid watching this show, probably as a kid that was smarter than a lot of the other kids my age and felt very isolated. I think I really related to this episode, but watching it as an adult, I definitely am like, oh, there's a lot of cringe in some parts of this episode, but overall, I still like it. I think it's still a decent episode.
Excellent. All right, so the next episode is 134 of the series, 10th of the season, and that is The Magnificent Ferengi. Stardate Unknown, directed by Chip Chalmers, written by Ira Steven Baer and Hans Beimler, Original air date, January 1st, 1998. Quark mounts a rescue mission when his mother, Ishka, is captured by the Dominion, and Grand Nega Zek offers a reward for her return. I gotta say, this might be my favorite Ferengi episode. I love this episode. I love... you know, the banter between them all. I love, when, you know, they make Nog, you know, the strategic operations officer. I love that, I can't remember his name, the psycho Ferengi, who doesn't want Latinum, he just wants to kill people. I liked his character. I liked, you know, that they had cousin Gala show up. I liked Liquidator Brunt, or ex-Liquidator Brunt, show up on this episode. I loved, you know, that we saw the Vorta from the second episode of the season come back in a prisoner exchange. I love Ishka. I love Iggy Pop playing, you know, the Vorta that has Ishka. This was just a great episode. It was fun. You know, like, you know, everything from Quark and Rom, you know, going through the you know, the crawl spaces, and they end up in Sisko's office, of all places, to, you know, they accidentally kill that Vorta, and then they got to, you know, rig him up like a puppet. And what else is there? Oh, and the fact that Rom and Quark are trying to keep the, you know, keep this, you know, the 50 bars of gold pressed latinum that they were promised, you know, like they're just going to say that it's 20 or whatever. Like they're trying to screw over the other Ferengi. Even Nog, they don't bring him in on it. Yeah, it was just a great episode. I love this one. All right, so Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I have to agree. This is definitely one of my favorite Ferengi episodes. Everything about it just kind of clicked, and it was actually funny, and there was a bit of a story there. Like, it was not just kind of thrown together. Mm-hmm. Iggy Pop just plays deadpan so yep. well. And then, I forget the name of the other Vorta. He just Kivon.
Yeah.
He just plays his part really well, and he's just kind of like the, you know, kind of a sarcastic jerk, you know, he's just like, whatever, he knows he's gonna die soon, so he doesn't really care.
Yeah.
But yeah, in general, yeah, this was a really good episode. I like watching this one, and it's never a skip for me.
Excellent. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Oh, I love this episode. I generally really enjoy all the Ferengi episodes, Ferengi-centric episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I love the, basically, it's the Magnificent Seven, the old Western, but,
yep.
you know, in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Got to assemble a crack team of Ferengis and go on a mission that's way out of their skill set, for the most part. And they do manage to pull it off, but only just. And, you know, Iggy Pop is phenomenal, definitely steals the scene, or the whole episode, really.
Yep.
And that little bit when he's reanimated and stiffly walking, oh, just kills me every time, man.
Yep.
Yeah.
Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I love the Ferengi episodes probably as much as everyone else here loves the Klingon episodes, and I gotta say, this is my favorite one by far.
Nice.
Like you guys keep saying, Iggy Pop, looking handsome for once, definitely steals it. I didn't say that out loud, did I? but, now, spoiler alert, you've been warned. Last chance. Okay, here we go. This is not the last time that these seven magnificent Ferengi will team up for a mission.
Hmm.
In Star Trek Online, which is canon,
yep.
They will get together once again, and of all things, they raid, and you play as each of them in different parts of the mission. It's very It's very Mission Impossible-like. It's super cool. Everyone's got that thing that they're good at. Lek is an absolute beast in a fight. You know, everyone's got their technical skills.
Yeah.
You storm an Iconian ship, a very old one. You steal a bunch of relics that they pillaged from other worlds, and then you actually get to kill an Iconian as Lek. So that's super cool. So this was like a prelude to one of my favorite missions in that entire game, which is, I mean, I'm a gamer, so to me, that's like, that's it. So for outside of the fact that it's a really awesome episode, it's super cool because it ties into future canon events. And it's definitely a great, you know, sigh of relief in the middle of all this war, doom and gloom, and everything.
All right. Excellent. So,
excellent episode.
Yep. I agree. Oh, sounds like someone's going through a wind tunnel.
Oh, sorry, my furnace just kicked on.
Oh, give me okay. 2 seconds.
I'll go shut it off. Hang on.
Okay.
It's only a winter in Canada. Who needs a furnace?
Yeah, right.
But we I gotta say, like in our part of the country anyway, we're really lucky because I mean it is quite warm for December. Like it's crazy. It's
downright tropical.
It's true.
Like I was
fun fact though. One of my good friends lives in Alabama, and I learned that he doesn't have a furnace. He has AC with a heat function.
Nice.
That's what it's like down there.
Better?
Oh, yeah. Yep. No, that... Okay. I just figured someone was driving or something, but it threw a ton. it's all good. Podcast. It's all good. All right, well, let's move on to the next episode. It is 135 of the series, 11th of the season, and that's Waltz. Stardate 51413.6, directed by René Auberjonois, written by Ronald D. Moore, original air date January 8th, 1998. An attack on a Starfleet ship carrying Galt Dukat to a hearing for war crimes, as well as Captain Sisko, who is to testify at the hearing, leaves the two of them stranded on a deserted planet together. Well, I gotta say this is definitely on my top five episodes of Deep Space Nine, and actually the Magnificent Ferengi would have been on there as well. I love this episode. I love Mark Alamo and Avery Brooks as actors, and I love them together. You know, and unfortunately, this is the last time that they're gonna be together. Until the series finale. But yeah, this is really the episode where we get, you know, Dukat goes full evil. Like he's clearly lost his mind. He's clearly had a breakdown, you know, with the death of his daughter. But he, you know, he's seeing people that aren't there. He's being consulted by people that aren't there. He beats the living crap out of Captain Sisko, like we don't see it, but we know what's happened, you know, and it's bad. But yet the acting is so amazing. Like Avery Brooks is amazing. Like I said, Mark Alamo is amazing. And yeah, this was really the episode that cemented Dukat, basically his turn to the dark side. You know, this was his moment where he's like, yeah, I'm all in now. And this is, you know, Sisko's moment where, you know, he comes to the realization Dukat's, like, his mortal enemy now. Like, you know. And, yeah, it was very powerful. Very powerful episode. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I have to agree with pretty much everything you said. This is a stellar episode. The chemistry between, you know, the two of them is just incredible. And yeah, you're right, this is kind of their last time together, and it is an incredible episode. It's very compelling, it's very emotional, and we do finally get to see, you know, Gul Dukat go full evil.
Yep.
Although for me, when he killed Jadzia, that was the moment that he went full evil. But yeah, he had a paw wraith in him and all that, but still, this is a stellar episode. A little bit slower paced, a little bit more dramatic, definitely one you want to pay attention to and not be like, you know, playing on your phone while you watch it.
And I just want to throw it out there, like, with this, the difference between, like, good Trek and what we're getting nowadays. Like, we don't actually see, we see Dukat bring the pipe down on Sisko. And you know, like, and then they cut to commercial, right? And then when they get back, you see Sisko, he's bloody, he's bruised, he's, you know, having a hard time holding things together, right? And Dukat's cleaning the pipe, like, he's basically wiping the blood off the pipe. And you know he just beat the shit out of him. And we didn't need to see it. We knew what happened, like, and the actors made us believe that this really happened. Whereas Picard, you know, Star Trek Picard or Star Trek Discovery, they actually have to show a guy getting an eyeball ripped out of his head. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I mean, that's the difference between good Star Trek and what we're getting now. And, you know, that scene, like, I just remember being, like, shocked, like, that, you know, Sisko, like, I love Sisko. I don't want him to get beaten up. And that's, like, when I would, like, Dukat, like, any redeeming quality that he had in him was gone after that commercial break. I was like, yeah, you know, you're done, buddy. Like, I hate you now. Like, in a good way. You know, like, they pulled it off. Like, they made me mad at Dukat for what he did. And that's good Star Trek, where you don't need to see the violence, but you know it's there. It's happened. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Jeez, I just had, like, a couple of revelations over here while you guys were just saying those things. I didn't realize until today that René Auberjonois directed this episode, and suddenly everything else you guys are saying has started to fall into place. Like, the man grew up in theater. He, you know, taught at Juilliard for a while. His mm-hmm. parents had him in acting classes. His parents were actors, too, weren't they? Or in theater somehow.
I think
But that's just making so much sense. This episode has such a different tone and pace compared to, like, all the other DS9 episodes. And it just... Well, everyone here has met René that one year, didn't we? No, yep. Regna, you weren't there the first year.
I did meet him separately from you guys, but I met him in Winnipeg. Yeah.
Oh, okay,
charming cool. man.
Yep.
Actually, when we met him in Vulcan, it was his birthday, and he spent the whole time running around serving his own birthday cake to the kids instead of enjoying his meal.
Right. I remember that.
What a class act that guy.
Absolute yep. class act that guy. But it makes so much sense because, yes, we saw Dukat go evil and kill Jadzia, as has been mentioned, but it sort of felt like we needed a little more of that, a little more of the why, like, to sort of explore what happened there a little more fully. Mm-hmm. And yes, Mark Alamo and Avery Brooks are fantastic, and they're fantastic together, but I feel like I have to give some more props to René Auberjonois for getting them to be
yep.
just exactly the way they were in this episode. And it's so viciously dark. Like, mm-hmm. there's dark episodes in DS9. It's the dark Star Trek, right?
Yep.
But this one has, like, a real creeping insidiousness behind it that you can't quite put your finger on, and that's what makes it so terrifying. And the fact that we don't actually see the violence adds to that. You guys ever watch Cloverfield?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what freaked you out so much about that monster was you couldn't see the damn thing.
Yep.
And one of the things that I've found... Like, I tell Jay, that's what I do. I'm the funny man, right? And one of the things I find is when you let people fill in their own blanks, that's when you get the best effect. And mm-hmm. it doesn't only work with comedy, but it also works with this sort of, like, psychological thriller sort of thing that we got going on with this episode. And for those reasons, like, everything was just so well executed that I have to give everybody props. Avery Brooks, Mark Alamo, and René Auberjonois for just bringing... like, exactly the right mix of ingredients to make this just such a terrifyingly good episode.
Yeah.
Like, and you can really, when you finally fathom the depths of Dukat's hatred, it's like, holy shit. Like, it's visceral.
And we should also throw props out to Casey Biggs, Nana Visitor and Jeffrey Combs, because they were like the personalities and that Ducat was, you know, riffing with, right? And they were amazing. Like, it, you know, even though they weren't...
I'll never not give Jeffrey Combs props.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, still, yeah, amazing. Even though their characters technically weren't really there, like, the what, you know, it was, yeah, all around, yeah. Like I said, this is easily on my top five Deep Space Nine episodes.
Easy. Yeah.
But, Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I'm not entirely sure that I can expand on the three of you guys' sort of barrage of information and just knowledge. You guys did great on that. What I can say for me is that it is so, like, excitingly dark. Like, I like that. And Curtis is right. It was likely very much due to René Auberjonois just dragging out the darkest recesses of their acting abilities. Because we both know, we all know, that Avery Brooks and Marco Limo can act their asses off.
Mm-hmm.
And the two of them together, they're like the perfect foils. Like, Gul Dukat is Sisko's foil, and I don't think anybody else could have done it better.
Yeah.
They have a great on-screen chemistry. They just work so well together. And, you know, Sisko does his best to be, you know, the professional Starfleet officer as best he can, but he has to do what he has to do. And I don't know, man. I think that I would have liked to see more of that sort of, like, dark and gritty that René pulled out.
Yeah,
I would have liked to see more of that. It was the dark Star Trek, as Curtis said, but holy. And
I have legitimate chills right now just remembering the episode.
Right? It is a very, like, chilling episode, and you just, like, you kind of go away from it, like, what the fuck just happened? Like, this, this is, like, realistic. Like, knowing, like, how I think about anything, and, like, if I was in Sisko's position, excuse me, or if I was in Ducat's position, it seems like it that's how it would have gone down, like, in real life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it just, yeah, top three best episodes, right up there, even maybe, depending on how you look at it, maybe even better than In the Pale Moonlight. So, yeah, 100%. We'll never skip.
Yeah, like I said, this was the episode where Ducat crossed that line that he could never come back from for me. And for, I think for most people. Like I said, when they come back from that commercial break and Ducat, you know, and you see Sisko, you know, he's hurt. And then Ducat's, you know, cleaning the pipe, you know, with a rag or whatever, like presumably cleaning the blood off of it. And then he says to Sisko, I don't know word for word, but to the effect, you brought this on yourself. And then Sisko says, just like all your victims, you know, like it was very much an abuser scenario, you know, and it was shocking. And it was hard to see, you know, Sisko go through that, because I love Sisko, you know, and I just remember being like so emotional from this episode, like mad and happy that in the end, you know, Ducat at least, you know, sent a signal to the Defiant to, you know, let them know where Sisko was. I mean, he could have left him on that planet and they never would have found him, right? Yeah,
but that could sort of be interpreted as its own form of sadism, too.
That is true, because, yeah, he'd rather him live knowing what he's done and will continue to do than have him just die, right? That's, yeah, very, very sadistic, for sure.
What a good episode.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so before we get into the next episode, I just want to explain, I just want to preamble a little bit about how I used to watch Deep Space Nine back in the day. Back in the mid-90s, I think it was like 1994, my parents bought one of them old satellite dishes, you know, like the big 8-foot ones that used to turn.
That had to, like, turn to find the satellite signal? Yeah, we had one of those too, buddy.
Yeah, so, yeah, you had to go to different satellites to watch certain channels or whatever, right?
Yeah, like G4 or C1 or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, I remember G5 was, like, a pretty popular one, and yeah. But anyway, I remember, back then, a lot of TV stations used to get their programming from, you know, basically just recording it off the satellite. So what they used to do is they would have what they would call wild feeds. So you would go to, like, a random channel, like, on a satellite that normally doesn't have anything on it. Like, it's not like a television station or anything. It's just a channel. Normally, you turn to this channel and there'd be just snow. Like, there'd be literally nothing on this channel. But then, at random times, you know, shows would show up. So for Deep Space Nine, like, their wild feed used to come up. I want to say the satellite, it was T3, Channel 3, if I remember correctly. And it was like 8 a.m.
These were pretty obscure.
Yeah. It would come on multiple times. It would come on 8 a.m. Saturday morning, 2 p.m. Saturday afternoon, and 2 p.m. Sunday afternoon. So, and this was the episodes that, you know, like ITV or WPIX, wherever you watched your Star Trek, this is where they would get their copy. They would record it, and then they would put it on their channel. So at the beginning of each episode, there would be like a title card that would show up. It would be usually like, I don't know, 5 minutes before, or maybe 10 minutes before the show actually, before the episode aired. It would come up, it would say Star Trek Deep Space Nine. It would say, you know, the episode title or whatever, and so on, right? And then it would show the previews for the next episode. And then you would have Rene Auberjonois as Odo would give, like, the sound checks. So each episode, it'd be like, this is the right channel. This is center. This is surround. And then they would go into the episode. So I never actually, for most of Deep Space Nine's run, I used to watch it on wild feeds. I never used to watch it, like, on an actual channel. So one of the nice, cool things about it is I used to watch these episodes before anyone else got to watch them. Like, I would watch these episodes before they would air on ITV or WPIX. Usually, sometimes a week ahead of time. Like, I remember going to a Star Trek convention in Edmonton, back when Creation used to have Star Trek conventions in, you know, multiple cities. And it was season 3, the first episode. It was the Search Part 1. And I remember watching it before I actually went to that convention, and people were talking about it, you know, like, what, you know, oh, this new ship, the Defiant, and no, you know, everyone was asking the guy that was, you know, was up on stage answering questions, you know, about the Defiant, about the new season, and I'd already watched the episode. Like, I had insider knowledge. It was awesome. So anyway, the reason why I went on this preamble is for our next episode. The original air date is February 4th, 1998, but I actually watched this episode on January 31st, 1998. And the reason I remember that is because that's my birthday. So this next episode, I will always remember as the episode on my 18th birthday. So I actually watched this episode at 8 in the morning Saturday, and then I ended up, me and my buddy, went to Bourbon Street in West Edmonton Mall, and basically got plastered that afternoon. And then we ended up going to, like, used to be a country bar in Edmonton called Cowboys. So we went there.
I remember Cowboys.
Yeah. So we went there for our 18th birthday. So this episode aired that day, on that first Wild feed in, on January 31st, 1998.
Early birthday present for Chris.
Yep. So this episode always has a special place in my heart. Plus, I like it. So it's episode 136 of the series, 12th of the season. Who Mourns for Mourn? Stardate Unknown. Directed by Victor Lobel. Written by Mark Gerard O'Connell. Original air date. It says February 4th, 1998, but I'm going January 31st because that's my birthday. 1998. Mourn is killed in an ion storm, and Sisko informs Quark that Mourn left his entire estate to him, but Quark has a little competition. It was a great Quark episode. I enjoyed it. I love all the, you know, like Quark, or sorry, Mourn's using air quotes ex-wife, like, man, was she hot. In her alien makeup. Yeah, it was really nice. And I like those brothers, you know, like there's the bigger slow talking one, and then there's the little sadistic one that, you know, really wants to hurt people. It was just a great episode. I liked it all around. And a little behind the scenes fact, that character that Quark convinces to sit first in Mourn's chair, because they wanted to keep somebody, you know, in that chair in remembrance of Mourn. That's actually the actor who plays Mourn, without his makeup on. Yeah. So he's the first one that sits in Mourn's chair. And for people who don't know, Mourn, spelt backwards, is Norm. And the character is kind of a wink, wink reference to Norm from Cheers. Yep.
Nice.
This episode, I know that was a long preamble, but it has a special place in my heart. I love it. Not as good as The Magnificent Ferengi, but it is a pretty good episode, I think. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Well, you're right. It's an incredibly enjoyable episode. And the guest cast is phenomenal. The two brothers, like you said, love them. I wish we could have seen more of them somewhere else. Gregory Itzen, of course, is back as Hain. He does a great job. He was the guy who wanted to prosecute Jadzia a few seasons ago.
Yep.
And he was also in Enterprise, I think. Bring something. He's been all over Star Trek. I love seeing him, though. He's very good in his roles. Absolute hilarious episode. It's so hard to nap in season 6 because they're all so good.
Yeah, it's definitely not a napping season, except for, the odd one here and there. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I thought it was a lot of fun. It's a Quark episode, and to be honest, the characters Crit and Nosk, the two brothers, were great. And then they throw in the, you know, the hot wife. You know she's about Mourn for his money.
Yeah.
And I like the sort of, like, reference to, like, Bank of Bolias. I think they've talked about that a time or two in the show. I like that they kind of keep with that, honestly. Yep. Aside from that, it's just, like, a really fun episode. And the whole, like, the mud bath thing, and then the bullfighting, like, velvet picture was just, like, wow, that's actually, like, really neat sort of thing they did with that.
Yeah.
And, Mourn backwards is Naram. It's like an anagram for Norm, which I thought was a really cool, like, you know, throwback. Like,
oh, hey. Right. Yes, it is an anagram, not a backwards. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, in general, it was a great episode, and I really like watching it.
Excellent. And also, I should point out, this is the episode that we learn... We actually see latinum in its true form, that it's just, like, this is liquid. That, like, the gold actually is worthless in the future. Which I was like, what? But anyway, Ragnar.
It can be gotten anywhere. Latinum is special.
Yeah. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
I just wanted to follow up on that and just say I always love that they make the joke, you know, worthless gold, right? Like, all gold is good for is... being a way to hold latinum. Mm-hmm. That, you know, gold press latinum, the gold is the invaluable part. I always thought that was hilarious. This is a great episode. I always really enjoyed it. And one of the things I really liked about this episode is that at the very end, Morn gives Quark a bunch of money, basically saying, like, I know I kind of hoodwinked you here, but, you know, here's a small fortune. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
And I always liked that part because so many times Quark loses and his schemes don't pan out. Now, this isn't one of his schemes, but he sure does do a lot of scheming. And I like that it actually did have, you know, a happy ending.
Yep.
I thought that was great.
Yep, agreed. All right. So this will be the last episode we talk about for this episode of the podcast. And it's a big one. So it's episode 137 of the series, 13th of the season, Far Beyond the Stars. Stardate Unknown, directed by Avery Brooks, Captain Sisko himself. Story by Mark Scott Zachary, teleplay by Ira Stephen Baer and Hans Beimler. Original air date, February 11th, 1998. As Sisko considers leaving Starfleet due to the destruction of his friend's ship, the Cortez, he has a vision of himself as a science fiction writer in the 1950s. Yeah, this is definitely on the top five. This might be... I don't know. It's a hard one between this and In the Pale Moonlight as my favorite. The acting in this is just phenomenal. Avery Brooks just kills it. We've dealt with racism before in Star Trek, but it's always wink wink nod nod. You know, it's let that be your last battlefield, where, you know, they're white on the right side, black on the left side, and the other ones are the opposite, you know, like, and, you know, Kirk and company don't understand, you know, like, why do you think they're inferior? They're exactly the same. No, they're not. They're white on the right side, you know, whereas this, they threw it right out there. You know, like, this is racism in the 50s. This is the way it was. You know, not just racism, but sexism. You know, like, there's a Nana Visitor's character who has to pretend to be a man in order to be a writer for their science fiction magazine. Yeah, they really pulled no punches with this episode. Again, acting was amazing. And I love any episode where we can get the actors out of their character. You know, I loved seeing Rene Auberjonois, like, the hard-nosed editor. You know, seeing Armin Shimerman as a writer. You know, Alexander Siddig as the English gentleman writer. You know, seeing what's his name? Drawing a blank on Martok's actor.
J.G. Hertzler.
Yes, as the artist for the pulp magazine. It was just great. And then seeing Mark Alamo and Jeffrey Combs as the racist cops. Seeing Sir Ock Lofton, I think, really did an excellent job. Playing his character. You know, that's the hustler.
And dropping the only N-bomb on Star Trek.
Yes. Yep. And like I said, they really were not pulling any punches with this. Like, they threw it out there. And Michael Dorn as the ball player. I loved seeing Sisko's dad in this episode again. This was just a great episode. Fantastic episode. Like I said, it's either number one or number two. Like, I'm going to play the wussy way out and just say it's tied for number one in my books between this and Pale Moonlight. Just amazing, absolutely amazing. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
Honestly, you're right. Top three episodes, Pale Moonlight, Waltz, and Far Beyond the Stars.
Yep.
This in a different way, portrays the exceptional ability of each one of these actors and how great they are at what they do. Yep. They can just take a different character and they can just murder it. They just body that scene, as the kids would say. And no problems. You're like, yeah, totally. That's exactly who they are. They just play it as if it was literally who they are. And I thought it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And this brings into the, you know, the cultural, like ideological side of Star Trek, where they don't push it the way New Trek does. New Trek forces their ideology on the audience, at least in my perspective. In this show, they portray, you know, this is what happened then, and this is a real thing. Mm-hmm. And look at how far they've come in 500 years. You know, these are real things, and it's just done so well. And I think, was it this one or was it the other one where Sisko had his, like, meltdown? I think this it was one. This one.
Yes.
He was in the scene, and he was in the scene so hard, it took Avery Brooks, like, 20 minutes to, like, fully calm down and, like, come out of character. Is that's how hard he was in the scene.
Yep.
That's how much this means to him. And Avery Brooks, I believe, you know, in the past he's been, like, an advocate, you know, for racism and things like that. Like, he's done mm-hmm. some serious things. And so this episode was really important to him. Yep. And just in general, and every single character in this episode just scored a touchdown. They hit the grand slam. And yeah, I just, man, not enough good things to say about this episode. I don't even know that I could find a nitpick about it. There isn't really anything that I could say that's like bad about it. It's just so well done.
Definitely. Agreed. Yep. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I have to first off agree with you guys. I absolutely love this episode, and I sadly find that it is still just as relevant to watch it now as when it came out in 1998,
yep.
which is a sad statement on us. But some of the things that I really liked about it was I loved seeing the characters out of makeup.
Yep.
I was absolutely shocked that Martok was not a black man. As a kid, I just assumed that all of the Klingons were played by black actors. And I was so shocked that he was white.
I don't want to be the one to tell you, but Gowron's right, white too.
Yeah, and so was Quark.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they're just so funny to me. I would have just thought it would make more sense to cast a black person because it'd be so much less makeup. But they cast people for performances, and they didn't take race into consideration, is my understanding. Mm-hmm. So, anyways, I got a real kick out of that. And I had heard that one of the endings for the series that they seriously considered was going to be going back to this world, and it would end with it all being a story that the character of Benny had written.
Yep.
And I'm glad they didn't do that, because that would have had a lot of implications for the rest of the Star Trek canon.
Yep.
But that would have been an interesting end. And perhaps maybe that would have been a better ending than we ended up getting, all things considered. But I don't know. I still think that there's something to that anyways.
Yeah, that was something that Ira Stephen Bear was really pushing for. But I agree. I'm glad they didn't do that. Because, yeah, it would have had implications for TNG, Voyager, everything. And I just want to throw it out there. I don't know if maybe we covered this when we did the season one episode. But J.G. Hertzler actually played the Vulcan captain in the pilot episode as well.
Oh, I think I missed that.
Yep. So, so that actor was not only in the pilot, but he's also in the series finale as well. It's different characters, but yeah. Same actor. But,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's pretty fantastic. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Jeez, I've been thinking this whole time about how best to talk about this. Anyone who knows me in real life knows I don't have a whole lot of tolerance for certain causes these days that I feel are a little bit fake and forced. But this episode is absolutely fantastic because it manages to get a message across to you and make you really consider, like, at the end of this episode, you are able to sit and think, wow, I have just witnessed some things through Benny's perspective.
Yep.
And that was really what was so well done about this episode, because instead of, and I haven't seen any new Trek, so I'm not accusing new Trek of anything, but instead of grabbing you by the shirt collar and shouting in your face until you agree, this takes the approach of like, hey, just check this out. And by the end of the episode, you find yourself going, holy shit. I mean, I kind of get it more than I did at the beginning of this episode. Mm-hmm. That is what was nicely done about this episode. And I really appreciate that.
Yep.
Beyond that, as far as just a Star Trek episode goes, I've said it all the way through all these podcasts we've been doing. I love seeing the actors have a chance to sort of step outside of their character's skin. And this episode's the best example of that. Armin Shimerman, I love him normally, love him extra in this episode. Just the feisty little dude, you know. I'm short too, so I get it. I can relate. Terry Farrell, yes. I really liked the twang she put on her accent. I don't know why. That just always stood out to me. Yeah, super fun episode. And Rene Auberjonois, I think, for me personally, did probably the most convincing job. Not that anyone else did poorly, but I really enjoyed the way he was able to sort of play the reluctant bad guy when he didn't want to publish Benny's story, you know? Really sort of just, God, all the ingredients worked so well together. It was just fantastic, and I think it really... It hit you in your teeth, but it wasn't in like a aggressive sort of way.
Yeah.
It's like the softest punch to the face one could get, which is just super cool. Definitely appreciate this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and they kind of come back to this world in the season 7 premiere, like at part 2. Where we get to see Casey Biggs as, Benny is in a mental institution and he's his doctor. Part of me kind of wishes they had done another episode like this in season 7, you know, just a flat out, you know, like, let's do a Brother Benny episode. But I'm kind of glad they didn't, because I think if they had done that, maybe...
Absolutely.
It would have felt like the Mirror Universe episodes, where it's like, you know.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And it worked so well the way it did, the way they did it.
Yes, yes. I guess I just wanted it because it was such a great episode, you know. And I guess, you know, ultimately what they did, you know, having, you know, a few scenes with him in the mental hospital with Casey Biggs, I guess that was probably the best route to take.
But again, it's like the episode we had a few episodes ago, Walt. The parts that they don't show you, where you get to sort of fill in your own gaps, that just makes it so much more, I don't know, relatable?
Yeah.
Because you're the one coming up with the context a little bit.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. Well, that's it for Season 6.0 Part 2. Like, we've reached Episode 13, so we will... continue with 6.5 in a future installment of these discussion episodes. But before we go, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. And Curtis, where can we find you, sir?
Funny story. As of today, I'm actually temporarily suspended from most of my social media. So at the moment, nowhere.
I don't blame you. Are you actually suspended? Like what? Or did you just take a break?
Yeah, for real. I made a joke at our Dr. Henshaw today that Facebook did not appreciate.
Really? Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, oops.
It happens. It happens. I posted a meme about our premiere, and so far nobody said anything, so I'm happy about that. But Richard, where can we find you, sir?
Basically the same. I'm Monk Cliffs on Instagram and YouTube, and I just got to do it again because I got to say RegnotTheTrader.com is the best place. I haven't been able to pick up a lot lately. You know, there's a lot of financial kids with a kid, things with a kid and all that, but he's been having some sick deals, and I shared on my Facebook because I think everybody should be buying his products. I use mine like every day. I have two Horn mugs.
Stuff myself.
Yeah, I need to as soon as I can afford it. I use the beard oil from, I use the Salty Dog, and it just, I'm not going to lie, my beard feels great. So there you go.
RegnotTheTrader.com. And the girls love it.
They do. They do. They love that manly, masculine nonsense. It's great.
And those drinking mugs, drinking horn mugs, I am definitely purchasing one in the not-too-distant future because they are awesome. I'd love a drinking horn, but I think I'd get more use out of the mug myself.
To be honest, it's much more practical. I have two horns, I think, two drinking horns, and I don't get a lot of use out of them because I game a lot, so I need to be able to put it down easily when I'm you know, gaming. And yeah, just follow the instructions. I like to use an amber ale to what do you call it, Ragnar?
To season it,
and it just turns out like top notch, man.
Nice. Yes, I will definitely be ordering one in the not too distant future. But Ragnar, why don't you share with the listeners where can we find you at, sir?
Well, thank you very much, and RagnarTheTrader.com. That's my main website, and I'm working very hard to keep it stocked. A lot of things are selling as fast as I can stock them, but
nice.
That's good because it's been a rough year.
yeah, no doubt. Hopefully 2021 will be a little bit better. But
I think it will be, but
Who knows? Yeah, I think it will. Well,
that's up to us, isn't it, really?
Yes, yeah.
We just got to do the things to make it better, right?
Yeah, we just got to get through this.
Let's be honest, it's a fairly low standard when it comes to being better than 2020.
Yeah.
Look at this. We're all sitting here. I bet you every one of us is in a better mood right now than we've been all day. Come on.
Yep.
It's true.
All right, well, we have this isn't going to be the last time you hear of the Deep Space Nine discussion panel in the not-too-distant future. They will be recording a segment for the 2020 Chris Lockhart Christmas special, which will be the next episode on this feed. So it's coming here in the next couple weeks. It'll be out before Christmas. So, yeah, we're going to be talking about Christmas in the coming weeks. So on behalf of myself, Chris Lockhart, Richard Szabo, Curtis Holme, and Ragnar, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub podcast. This was our Deep Space Nine discussion panel, Season 6.0, Part 2, and we will see you again for the Chris Lockhart Christmas special.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year. I don't know if there'll be snow, but have a cup of cheer. Have a holly jolly Christmas. And when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet. Somebody waits for you, if her wants for me. Have a holly jolly Christmas, and in case you didn't hear.
you walk down the street. Say hello to friend Pluto and everyone.